So why is the controversy? Why is there so much controversy that we can't get a consensus on what is the upper level of these indices? And it's because the research is just not there, and because our patients are unique. There's so many things going on with them, and there's so many things that play into the results that we see. This slide is an older slide. You can see it's 1979. But what they took were normal males and normal females. And I don't want to say anything negative about anybody that I ever speak to, but I've never found anybody that's been in this study. I don't know what that says about us. But look at the males in particular. Look at those ranges. Normal males, these were males that had, and females that had no known chronic illness, no known reason to have any inflammation or infection, and yet their range was almost up to 500. So if in normal people it's almost 500, and now then we're saying at 500, if we've got more than 500 ferritin in our patients, we need to be looking and seeing, is there something else going on? I truly believe that high ferritins mean something. I just think that we're not smart enough to always know what they mean. Because ferritin is 100% specific, okay? If it's elevated, if it's low, it's gonna tell you that your iron stores are low. But it's not that sensitive, only 41% sensitivity. And it's because when it's high, we don't know if it's because you're iron replete or if there's non-iron reasons. And I hope that you've understood that we have lots of patients that have a lot of reasons to have problems with serum ferritins and low transferrins. This is a study by Fuden, which was an Israeli study we could have never done here in the United States. And I'm not going to explain the study, but what I do want you to look at is those baseline serum ferritins. So you can see these were all incident patients before the study started, and look at the ranges. The averages are in the 200 to 250, 260 range average, but when you look at ranges, some of those ranges went up to 500. But look at that bottom line. In 36 of the 39 patients, they had no stainable iron in their bone marrow. So here we have ferritins of 200, which we said a while ago that they may be iron replete, and they go all the way up to over 500, and in this small study, but it's provocative, there was no iron in the bone marrow. So in these particular group of patients, 500 wasn't enough for some of them, but 200 didn't mean that they had adequate stores either. So you have to go back and look. So if you stop and think about the patients that are in your patient population, look at these things. I can tell you that I have some patients that have numerous of these problems. I find access site infections, abscessed teeth, gout. Some of y'all have big numbers of Hep B, Hep C patients in your patient population. And then peripheral vascular disease. I mean, I'm always having sore toes, wounds on their legs, etc. going on. When those things are going on and your hemoglobin's going down, it's inflammation and or infection. So we have to look and see what's happening there. Do many of y'all get CRPs? We used to get CRPs when they first came out back in the 90s, and then we decided we weren't smart enough to know what to do with them, and we don't get them anymore. But those of you that are privileged enough to get them, and that's part of your package, C-reactive protein is an inspecific marker for inflammation. So you should get a baseline when the patient's at their healthiest, whenever that may be. And then if you are having a problem, you can repeat the CRP, and if it's elevated from that baseline, you know that something's going on, be it infection or inflammation in that particular patient. And have a reason to believe that, hey, that's, you know, you can look deeper into it. And you can see when you divide the patients in the 200 to 800 and the 800 to 2000 group, that obviously the ones that are in the higher group have higher C-reactive proteins. The only people that I get these in right now are my multiple myeloma patients. And it really does work. That's one of the first things when they start running fevers that we get, and then we judge whether to treat them or not treat them. So when you're looking at patients that have elevated serum ferritins, the big thing is to rule out, do they have an active infection? And I always think back of those days when we were using DFO, and you know, we were chelating iron in our sickle cell anemia patients and our patients that were getting gobs of transfusions. You know, that particular set of patients would get these just gosh awful bacterial and, fungal infections, because some bacteria and fungus love iron-rich blood. And that's the reason if you're giving iron and someone has an active infection, what the transferrin is supposed to do is take it and put it in storage as a protective mechanism. And so that's called inflammatory iron block. So you always want to rule out active infection. You look and see when you gave your last dose of IV iron. If you gave it on Monday and you checked your iron on Wednesday, maybe it was your dose of iron that created a problem. Look and see, does the patient live there? Those of y'all that heard me speak in Kansas City know that I have patients, I looked at my patients, I had about 20% of them that fell out in that 800 plus ferritin, but 50% of that 20% kind of lived there. They ran between 800 and 1,000, sometimes a little over, sometimes a little under, but that was just their normal. They had some underlying something that caused that ferritin to be up. If we can dig in and find out what that is, that's great, because maybe we can help them. But holding iron is not going to be one of those things that probably does. Then you look at the last time you drew your serum ferritin. Again, that tells you, keys in with your dosing. And you have to weigh what is the risk and what is the benefit of giving that iron dose. We want to do no harm, but we want the patient to receive the benefit if they need to. So how do you judge it? Remember, functional iron deficiency is for whatever reasons that patient is just not mobilizing iron, it's not bioavailable to meet the needs of that particular patient. And then inflammatory iron block is what I just described. There's an infection and the ferritin's the transferrin's taking the iron into storage. So what can you do? Try it. They might like it. So you give a dose of iron. If you have no response to the iron, then you've got inflammatory iron block. Now remember, I said inflammatory. It could be infectious, it may not be infectious, but at that point you need to look. So how long should that trial be? If you start a trial of iron today, it's going to take at least a month, maybe 6 weeks before you start seeing things unch up, but it's going to be at least a month. So what I do in those cases after I've ruled out any active infection is I start them on low-dose iron, because that way it's bioavailable, we can use it and see, is it going to make a difference? If the hemoglobin goes up, and you can decrease your EPO dose, then you've got a functional iron deficiency. And I think we're missing a lot of functional iron deficiency in our malnourished, poorly dialyzed, bone diseased patients. And we are also missing that balance, because even though we trend the EPO, many of us are not trending the iron. And I always say that my experience, and even though I told you I've been at the university 30 years, doesn't mean that I'm at a university-owned unit. I used to be, and then it was RCG, and then it was Gambro, and now it's DaVita. And it's been in different sections of each one of those companies. Well, in two of those companies, they've kind of batted us around, because there's not that many corporate dialysis in Arkansas until just recently. And so I've had the privilege of dealing with a lot of different anemia managers a lot of different ways, even in my own unit, and the privilege of talking to many of y'all. And what I found is that your novice anemia manager the job is so overwhelming that they concentrate on that EPO dose, because that's really what y'all get whooped up about. And then they forget that there's an iron dose over here, and it's both of them need to be trended. Okay. So if that patient does not respond, I can't reinforce enough, That's when you stop. That's when you go looking for that occult access infection in that old graft or something else going on with the patient, because you are looking to do no harm and you want to see what's going on. This is a study that I've heard some people like and some people don't. I like it because I had the experience with it. I had a doctor that went and heard Bessarab give this talk probably at ASN 2000, 2001. And what Bessarab thought he would do is he would get all of the transferrin saturations up above 30. And if he could do that, he thought that he could have a stable dose of stable hemoglobins with much less EPO. And actually what he did was it worked. He got everybody's transferrin saturation up to above 30, 30 to 35. But look what happened to his ferritins. They kind of went up, up, up. Now this is cumulative data. So my doctor came back and said, okay, I'm a taxpayer. I'd like to use 40% less EPO. And so he tried it. And I will tell you that I found the same thing out that Bessarab did. I can't keep ferritins above 30 on all of my patients without having a problem with, I can't keep my TSATs above 30 in all of my patients without having ferritin problems. And so what I learned to do, that's when I got my big experience in trending iron. I said, okay, well, 30's not working for me. Let me shoot for the mid-20s. And so that's where I shoot for, is the mid-20s. And so when I start seeing my TSATs going up and they're trending up above mid-20, that's when I start tweaking my dose back down. Again, a balance. And it works well for me. That's not to say that I don't have patients with TSATs higher than that, because I certainly do. And Bessarab, with him getting them up in the above 30, he probably treated a lot of functional iron deficiency. And that's one of the reasons that he got to use 40% less EPO. But trend your EPO and trend your iron, not just one or the other. Now, I hope you've understood that it's difficult to determine if the IV iron is going to be beneficial in your patients with higher serum ferritins. You just have to try it. In my experience, 8-9 times out of 10, it works. Patients are individuals, just like we nurses are individuals. And they all have patient-specific disease states that have to be considered. And so that means that we have to use those assessment skills that we've all known and learned and possess. And we just have to hone them. And we have to build that village around us to let us know what's going on with those patients. I looked at our serum ferritins because if I wanted to see how many of my patients in my unit had ferritins above 500, and I encourage y'all to do this too. If your ferritins are above 800, which is what we've been looking at, you can see in my unit that anywhere from around 12 to almost 24% in this 3-month period, and I have a very novice anemia manager who's missing tweaking iron. But even when I look at it sporadically, it's somewhere in that neighborhood. Usually more on the 20-ish side, so December was an unusual month. But that's a kind of what you want to look at in your protocols. If you have somewhere in the 10 to 20% that fall out of your protocol, those are the patients that you say, okay, I need to take a closer look. When you add in all of those patients that are above 500, that takes me up to about 50 patients a month that I'm supposed to look at. And I think that that's a little unreasonable on a monthly basis. But I think we ought to do it at least once. I think we need to look at those patients, see what their ferritins are, see if they live there, talk to them. Is there something that you can do? I tell a story about one of my patients on rounds that, and I know her extremely well, but I was rounding, her ferritin was up, her transferrin saturation was down, her albumin was down. You know, I said, your lab is screaming at me that something's wrong with you. What's going on? And she was quiet for a minute, denied everything. And I just looked at her and I said, you know how you have just this little voice? And I said, are you doing drugs again? And she hung her head, and she was. So after dialysis, she came in my office, wanted to get in rehab. We got her in rehab. Her numbers, she got off drugs, and her numbers came down. So I say the moral to that story is that if your patient is a drug user and they have a sudden increase, their ferritins may well go up, but if they're on a stable dose, that may just be the people that live there, and you're just going to have to look. But I point this out to say that ferritins mean something. We're not saying that they don't mean something, but it's just that we can't always figure out exactly what they mean. There is a patient, a face behind that number, and they may not be near as cute as my Megan. But you should expect about 20% of your patients to fall out of a protocol. So as you're looking and seeing what you're doing, I think this is a wonderful opportunity to look and see, have I missed something? One of my collaborating physicians, I have five, said there was an article, which I haven't found yet and he hasn't produced, that he's looking, he's told me he would, I'll get it sooner or later, but he had read a review article that said that we had this huge number of bowel cancers that we were missing in our incident hemodialysis patients. And I can tell you, when I looked at my data in the fall, the people that were above 200, I had two patients that had above 2,000 ferritin. One was just diagnosed with bowel cancer, and the other one was multiple myeloma. So again, high ferritins mean something, we just don't know what they mean. But those outliers in whatever the protocol is that you use or whatever algorithm you use, they need further assessment. You need to look at their history. Do they live there? And you just need to get a dispensation from the Pope or whoever your prescriber may be, to have a higher ferritin in them, but discuss it with whoever is your prescriber, because ultimately it's their responsibility. But you know what? They need our guidance, because that same physiology that I just went over with y'all, I do that with my physicians, with my nephrology fellows every other year, so that I hit all of them. And I can tell you that it's a new way of looking at things for them. They certainly have much deeper background in physiology than I do, but to point out the nuances is important. Go and do a further exam. You know, take those shoes off, look and see if there's some sores, what's happening with them. Look at further testing. Do you need to get a CRP? I don't use reticulocyte hemoglobins. We have one unit that does, and the doctor hasn't been real favorable with what his results have been. But, you know, they tell you if you're iron deplete. They don't tell you if you're overloaded. But you can look if y'all have that to your availability and you like using it, that may give you a clue. Look at what that albumin is. See what's going on there. Work them up any way that your history and physical exam leads you. And if you don't know what it is, send it to your APN or your MD. And I use my MDs just like I use my husband, you know? Well, not exactly. You know, if I don't know what's going on, and, you know, we have such a rich knowledge, especially those of y'all that have been nursing for a long time. You know how when you know something's not right, but you just can't figure out what it is? Well, that's when I go to my doctors. And, you know, I'm kind of like Dean Witter at the university. If I say it, they kind of listen. But, you know, I'll say, something's wrong. I can't figure out what it is. And, you know, then if they can't figure it out either, it makes me feel better. If I find out later that truly what was wrong and I missed it, I say, well, he missed it too. But get as many people looking, because the more people that are looking, even your care techs and all, it's amazing the knowledge they have, because they're with the patient for the whole treatment. The patient tells them stuff. So get everybody you can involved when you're worried. I don't believe in worrying alone. I like to celebrate with people, and I like to worry with them too. If I'm worried, I want you all to worry. And that's essentially what I tell patients. If I'm rounding on them and there's something funky in their lab, I say, you know, this really bothers me. I give some questions, and I say, well, I'm going to watch this. I want you to help me watch it. And if you come up with anything, and I'll give them a list for whatever, I want you to let me know. That way, if they're doing something they're not supposed to do, they're caught. You know, if we called all of our kids and we got all caught the first time we were doing things we weren't supposed to do, we'd probably all be better people. But I truly believe that the anemia manager in your unit should be and could be the first person that knows your patient's in trouble. And if we give them the time, the resources, and the knowledge to do the job the way it's meant to be done, such an asset, not just to outcomes that are linked to money, but to the quality of care and the quality of life that our patients can have. We are so important and integral in that, and I do believe that correcting anemia in my 30 years has been the major thing that has added benefit to my patients' lives. And so in summary, when you look at those labs, don't just look at labs. Think about the person that's behind that lab. Identify that patient history, get to know it. Look at what the possible barriers to EPO efficiency is. Use a systematic, logical thought process in what you're doing, and I hope that I've added some pearls to what you're looking at. Look at iron availability. You know, did you hold the iron for some reason and you haven't started? You know, I give little small doses, 31.25 of iron, and that's kind of my low dose, 31.25 once a week. I've tried other things, and we can talk about it in the question and answer, but that tends to work out best for us. Some people don't like to do that because you're using two doses out of one vial. And so for those people, 62.5 every other week. And then I go up from there. And occasionally I have to go down. But our patients are individuals. We should expect that we can't have everybody on the same thing. Look at your EPO dosing and go in there and actually look at the ones that are using big, big doses and see, am I treating those people with iron appropriately? And then look at those patient-specific targets that we looked at before. And I want to just thank you. And this, is, again, is not Deborah Bowie. This is my Megan, who's a little bit older. But I thank y'all so much for the work that you do with our patients, because together we have made a difference, and we do make a difference on a daily basis in the lives of so many people. And I'm looking forward to hearing Deborah talk about her experiences with CQI and how she's been handling iron in their unit. And so I'll turn it over to her now. Thank you.